listening. Stay tuned for Trial and Tribulation. Thanks to Teresa Louise Boardman, Ron Brinkley, Joy Moore, and Kelly Ramirez for their help tonight. Lynn Haug produced recorded portions and is at the controls with Glenn Reeder. I'm Vanessa Tate. Good evening.
Tune to KPFA or KPFB in Berkeley, KSCF in Fresno, where the time is 6:31. A radio ballad is a sound tapestry woven of four basic elements: songs, instrumental music, sound effects, and the recorded voices of those with whose lives each program deals. The radio ballads, which came out of England, were the joint creation of Ewan McCall, Charles Parker, and Peggy Seeger. These programs were revolutionary for their time, using, as they did, the actual spoken words of the informants, as they were considered at the time. And up until this time, this actuality was transcribed and then interpreted by trained radio speakers. But it wasn't until Seeger, McCall, and Parker got a hold of the idea that we began to hear from the real people, the people who had lived these lives. The radio ballads led you effortlessly from song to music to sound effect to the spoken word and back again, revealing the effect of a way of life upon those who truly were living it. These were at once musical and poetic and educational. There were eight of them in all, created between 1957 and 1964. The ballads included such topics as railwaymen, road builders, herring fishing communities, coal miners, teenagers, boxers, and there was one titled The Traveling People, about Britain's nomadic peoples. I'm Susan Stone, and you are listening to Trial and Tribulation on KPFA, which presents part one of a two-part presentation titled The Body Blow, one of the BBC radio ballads, which came out of the British folk music movement and was, in fact, released on the airwaves in 1962. I'm very pleased to have gotten a hold of it. And what we're going to hear now are five people disabled by polio, since The Body Blow is distinctive for the fact that it is about the psychology of pain. Now, The Body Blow, a radio ballad by Peggy Seeger, Ewan McCall, and Charles Parker on KPFA's Trial and Tribulation.
I remember giving my name, and then this awful suffocation feeling, couldn't breathe. The next time I woke up, I heard this machine sort of I heard the word polio, but I didn't exactly connect it with myself. I think that it's just a word you read in the papers and you say, oh, that's that awful thing those people in Kent got, you know, isn't it a shame?
The Body Blow, a radio ballad by Ewan McCall, Peggy Seeger, and Charles Parker on the battle with poliomyelitis fought by five people, by Norma Smith.
I got polio in 1958, and I'm now left paralysed below the waist, no use in my legs at all.
By Heather Ruffle.
Well, I'm left virtually without any movement except my head. Breathing is difficult. I use my neck muscles a lot, particularly when I'm lying down. But sitting up, I have to frog breathe. That's why I sound a bit disjointed.
By Paul Bates.
The most upsetting thing about growing up, tracheotomy done or your throat cut, is that you lose the basic form of communication. You cannot speak, and that is the most upsetting thing. But for some reason, I could speak, and I still can, quite independently of when the machine's going up or down, whereas other tracheotomies, like Duchy, for instance, they can only speak on the inspiration phase of the machine.
By Duchy Holland, to whose machine-chopped speech the tape recorder, with the editing that it makes possible, can restore wholeness.
We can still do many things that we used to do in the old days. So please don't pity us. And worst of all, don't look at a crippled person and think they're mental. Because believe me, they're not.
And the battle fought back in the everyday world of the housewife by Jean Hagger.
And, of course, there's always embarrassing moments in your life when you're disabled. Not only in finding new ways in dressing yourself, but you do come up against people.
The battle of five people against polio. We present The Body Blow.
What day did the world stop moving? What day did the earth stop turning? What day did the sun stop shining? What day?
On the Thursday, I was in one world. On the Monday and Tuesday, I seem to have been thrown into a completely different world.
It was in the season of the year when the small birds, they do fly. When the flowers are blooming fresh and gay and the sun burns in the sky. I spied a fair young woman by the margin of the sea. Had taken off the pleasant air with her young babe at her knee. All through that summer's afternoon, how they did sport and play. Till tired at last upon the sand, that fair young woman lay. She heard the cries of wheeling gulls and the murmur of the sea. But she did not hear the coming of the hidden enemy. All drunk and drowsy with the sun, she lay there half in sleep. While undetected to her side, the enemy did creep. Death did stand at her right hand and did no mercy show. But to this young woman cruelly dealt a body blow.
Where were you when the birds stopped singing? Where were you when the flowers stopped blooming? Where were you at the bodies dying? Where were you?
In August. I went down to Brighton with my daughter for about 3 or 4 days, you know, having the usual nice time, taking on the swings and going on the beach. And I came home to tea and I had this awful sensation around my waist. I couldn't stand the material of my blouse on my waist and all my legs were aching. I went to bed early, took a couple of aspirins, and Carol was sleeping with me because we were a bit squash of a room. And I couldn't stand the touch of her, you know, her legs on my body in bed. I felt most peculiar sensations. I was in an awful lot of pain and had a very bad night. So I had the doctor on the Sunday morning, and he said it was flu. And so, of course, everybody thought it was flu. So I came downstairs, so not to be a nuisance, you know, with trays and things, and I fell on the floor. I was very surprised, you know. I mean, I'd had flu before, but I'd never exactly been so weak as to fall down. So, of course, I came and laid on the couch all Sunday. I felt terribly ill. And Sunday night, I don't think I could have been conscious, really.
Blow by blow, this cruel foe does strike with grim intent. Until the body is laid low, all strength and courage spent. The citadel is occupied, the road from brain to hand is blocked now by the enemy, and death is in command.
I'm sort of shivering, terribly cold, and this terrible headache, it felt as if I had my head split open.
Bang, 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 like someone inside with drums.
Terrific pains up each side of my neck. Felt as if it was hanging half on the top.
And he said, I think you've got a touch of rheumatics in the head.
Your neck muscles go and you walk around like some old man.
I wondered whatever was happening to me.
My arms and legs started to go, and then finally, my breathing. And when I was rushed to hospital, I wondered what on earth was going on.
It is sort of dreamlike. I mean, you've had a shock to the body, and of course then your mind is a shock to the mind as well. And of course you don't see anybody's face. I mean, they haven't got any sort of identity to you, just eyes. That makes it more weird. They're masked because you're so infectious. You just see eyes, different sorts of eyes peering at you,
wearing white gowns and white masks, frightened eyes looking at me.
I got up to make my husband a cup of tea.
Sit up. Your brain will say, sit up.
For suddenly,
nothing happens. You think, but I didn't sit up.
I'm losing the use of my left arm. He said, go on, you're havering. I said, I'm not.
What's the matter?
I'm losing the use of it. I could feel the use going out of the shoulder, right down to the fingertips. And I can always remember him lifting my arm and turning it round and round and round to try to put the light into it again.
I think, gosh, my legs are gone. I can't move my arms. When you get such a shock.
It felt like all the muscles were being actually knocked out of action. It was like electric light bulbs all burning out. One, two, three, four. Just one after the other.
Yes. It's a strange thing about nature that you just don't realise how serious a thing is at the time. It's almost nature's way of protecting you.
The hidden foe, it lies in wait and chooses place and time. It strikes the woman in her bloom, the young man in his prime. The runner who is in full stride, the soldier in the field. The strong, the young, the healthy, to this enemy must yield.
Do you recall how you climbed the mountains? The morning swim in the salt sea water. What was the name of the powerful sprinter? Was it you?
10,000 miles across the world, far from his native land. The young man leads his company, a carbine in his hand. By swamp and jungle path he goes and stalks his human foe. But the hidden enemy behind him deals a body blow.
1954, August 1954. Serving in the Malaya, doing what I think would have been one of my last patrols. I got up, and my men carried all my equipment except the carbine. I had no thoughts of what might be wrong with me, I just felt ill. They got me into an ulster to fly down to Kuala Lumpur, down to the base hospital, and I'm rather big, 6'4". Which doesn't, you know, go easily into that sort of thing. It dragged me out feet first. I got into the ward, was helped to undress, and I sat on the edge of the bed. and then decided to lie down, be more comfortable, lay back, and I couldn't get my left leg onto the bed. And that was the last time that I sat on the side of a bed or anywhere. And from then on, things really began to move. I was transferred to a tank respirator. And I had the bulbapolia, which means the paralysis of the swallowing. It's quite simple, eventually. You drown, you see, in your own secretions, you can't cope with them. And the idea is that you put a tube down the person's throat, feed air through the tube, and then you can take them out of the iron lung, anaesthetize them, and then cut their throats literally. Put a shortened tube straight into the throat, which I've still got 8 years later, and breathe them through that, respire them through it. My unfortunate dad is still fighting, and they put this tube down my throat, and I bit through it. I also bit the anaesthetist, and he tried to retrieve the broken tube. He tells quite an amusing story. I believe his language is marvelous. He's a good, strong Yorkshireman. I've met him since, and we're extremely good friends, and he always sort of licks his thumb when he comes in, but... Anyway, they did the operation in what I think they would claim to be a world record of about 28 seconds. No anesthetics were necessary because I was out and almost gone anyway.
Every cell despoiled and raided. Every muscle is invaded. Every nerve affected, brain from body disconnected.
Lungs are the next objective. Can't breathe. Can't breathe. Can't. It's the mayor.
The swimmer panics in the undertow. Fingers lose their hold on the rock face. The runner stumbles on the rim of darkness.
I think you've got to be a polio to really understand. We have a saying in this ward that we live dangerously. And by golly, you do. If someone's forgotten to put a shilling in a meter, bang goes your air supply.
We have to have machines to help us live, but they're not enemies. Awful, frightening things. The machines are our friends. Well, they're our life, our breath.
Steel and plastic deputy for lungs. Does your breathing for you night and day? This small machine, your shield, your sword and buckler, holds death at bay. A week, a month, a century of pain. One day you may learn to breathe again. If not,
your joy, for life this breathing tomb and you. Man and machine.
Well, the first week in hospital, I didn't remember anything at all.
Somebody.
Not in this world at all.
Calling my name.
I'm awfully sorry, but I really don't know you.
Asking me what day it was.
I remember there was a window, and I saw this funny shape.
Easter Sunday.
And I kept looking at it and wondering what it was.
But I wasn't afraid.
It was rather like Punch and Judy. And then it sort of materialised into a little nurse. And then, of course, as soon as she saw me, she smiled. And
when I woke up at night, my husband was standing beside me.
You know, people are awfully good. The way they talk to you and the way they help you.
I used to wonder what was down below. I could hear people laughing. I suppose there are other patients in the other wards, and I could hear television. But a lot of those sounds used to make me feel ill because I had an awful sensation if anybody shouted or that somebody dropped something, it used to go through my body like a pain. As if I was super sensitive, my whole body, all my skin used to creep with this noise.
You're ill. The whole body is aching. It's not used to being lying on its back and flat. And the muscles are gradually changing because they're not being used. You get passive movements, but there's agony.
And of course, you're very surprised because I've always thought that paralyzed people were numb. You know, I always thought if anybody was paralyzed, they wouldn't feel anything. And of course, you do feel everything.
Body's aching and it's racked with pain. It certainly is in the beginning.
It's deep bone ache. It's in every muscle and everything. Your whole body seems to shriek with pain. And your heels. Little pains start and then they get like flames and then they get like worse flames, and unless somebody lifts them and rubs them to relieve that, it just gets, well, it just nearly blots you out. You just have to give into it. You just have to lie there and bear it, you see. You can't do anything about it. You just have to let yourself get carried away on the pain. To me, I kept feeling it was just like being crucified all the time.
You have to know pain to appreciate being out of pain. That's why the pain when I first got polio and the no pain now, that's why I'm happy.
To me, at that time, I felt that the world was finished for me.
And it was a silly feeling. I knew it was silly. I kept saying all day long, I want to get out of here. I must get out. I'm going. I'm going to get out. And the fact that I knew, my mind told me I couldn't get out, made it worse. I felt more desperate to get out then. I wanted to walk away from the situation, I think. I just felt I must get away from it. I didn't like it. I couldn't bear it.
You see, you're just there as an individual, absolutely helpless. Only you can think. You've got a mind left.
Think back. I worked at Ford's on the commercial assembly line.
Useless.
Cling on to it desperately.
I worked at Ford's.
You're not master of your body.
If I was a dog, they'd have destroyed me.
I will.
I don't want anybody to come near me.
Ever again.
The worst month was being isolated, because then you've got time to think.
And I can't help but wonder, what good I'll ever be? A disabled mother, not able to look after her child, not able to look after my husband, not able to do a thing, ever again.
Hands that were supple and strong, the best servants that ever could be. weak and crippled now. Why should this happen to me?
You're just not in control anymore. You're not the controller.
Legs strong and shapely for walking and running and dancing too. Weak and crippled now. Why should this happen to you?
You resent your body because it won't do the things you want it to do. One just resents everything. I just resented living.
What lies in store? To shuffle on crutches, will that fate be mine?
To creep like an old man an inch at a time.
To be pump-fed with air.
To be wheeled in a chair.
To be rocked on a bed like a babe in its cot. Will I stagnate and rot?
I served all throughout the war and never received a scratch. But it makes me laugh to think that now I can't move nothing all these years later.
Is a turn of the head. The vanquished body is helpless and waits to be fed. The hands that obeyed you, the legs that conveyed you, just memories now. You're dependent on somebody else.
The Body Blow, one of eight radio ballads by Peggy Seeger, Ewan McCall, and Charles Parker. The Body Blow, which is about the psychology of pain, and it was first broadcast in England in 1962, coming out of the British folk music movement. Distinctive, as you have heard, for the stories of five people disabled by polio, intercut with the powerful lyrics of Seeger and McCall. And you've heard The Body Blow, this first of two parts on KPFA's Trial and Tribulation, a radio series which comes to you each and every Sunday at this time here at 94.1 FM, bringing you stories about crime, justice, and human nature, and this certainly being an exquisite portrait of human nature in very difficult circumstances. Part two next week, August 12th, Sunday evening at 6:30 p.m., 94.1 FM, KPFA, or KPFB in Berkeley, KFCF in Fresno, where the time is 6:58. Coming up after these announcements, it's going to be time for Joe Frank tonight. His tale is that of the predator on KPFA.
The Northern California Kia Keto Society will host a benefit three-day summer camp the weekend of August 10 through 12 at Holy Names College in the Oakland Hills. Training in meditation, breathing, body work, and martial arts techniques will be offered. This camp is open to the public. Lodgings and meals are available for full-time participants for $150. Separate day and class rates are available. This site is wheelchair accessible. For more information, contact Renee Bornstein at 510-527-3033 or visit our website at kiaikido.org. That's KIAIKIDO.org.
This young lady came to stay with us a couple of months ago. She's a very close friend of my daughter's. They're both ballet dancers, both 17 years old, and they've known each other since they were 13 in various places, maybe summer programs around the country.
Joe Frank.
My daughter is in residence at a ballet school down in Washington, taught by Russian ballet teachers. And since my daughter is away for the year, finishing up high school in a boarding situation, and this year